This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 58, with special guest Joel Hammond. That's it. There's no other title. Joel runs the Indians Twitter account. It was a great interview. He's great. The episode was amazing. Please listen to it. Recorded on January 16th, 2017. Hello and welcome to Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast. As always, with your hosts, me, Matt Lyons, and Jason Lucard. Jason, how you doing?
Doing pretty good. At this point, baseball's starting to feel close enough. There's a lot of countdowns on Twitter, you know, how many days away we are and stuff like that. It's starting to feel real. It feels closer to next season than last season at this point.
I never noticed when that happened, but it comes at some point every year. It's definitely passed already that it feels closer to... I think it's when people start mentioning pitchers and catchers. Just those two words makes it seem like it's next year.
We have dates for things now, so that makes it feel real.
And you know, the cool thing is to just randomly stream a Facebook Live video with a countdown, which we should do just for months at a time and let people watch and see when it goes down. So today, if everybody didn't know, we have quite a few exciting things. Obviously, I mean arbitration, because that happened. That is the most exciting time of the baseball season, off season, isn't it, Jason?
Something like that.
It beats out the World Series, everything. Nothing's more exciting. No, the real thing that we have fun today is we're joined by Joel Hammond. He's the Assistant Director of Communications. And more importantly, what that basically means is he's the guy behind the fantastic Indians Twitter account. Joel, thanks for joining us.
You got it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. I don't know if you're aware, like sitting behind the Indians account, how many fans, like just of, that are also Indians fans, just are fans of the Twitter account in general, just of all the great stuff you do, just the back and forth with fans, all the great ways, all the gifts, everything like that, all the interaction. One thing we wanted to start with was just, what was your path to get to that job? Like, did you start as just like an intern who just happened to do social media, or did you apply like as a social media person, or what was that like?
No, I did not start my career in baseball. I was a journalist for many, many years. I worked at Crane's Cleveland Business in Cleveland for about 7 years before joining the Indians. So I, you know, kind of cut my teeth and paid my dues outside of baseball. You know, I work with people who have been with the Indians for 25 years, started as unpaid interns. And, I sort of lucked my way into it on the back end. You know, I started elsewhere and kind of established my career a little bit, and then moved over to the Indians in 2013.
So there's something I've always kind of wanted to settle. Like whenever you guys obviously haven't done it, but if somebody ever makes any kind of mistake on Twitter, it's always an intern got fired. Do baseball teams, like, are interns even close to the professional Twitter accounts of like these big companies with so many followers?
Well, for us, I think every team at least does it differently. I mean, for us, you mentioned that I was kind of I get a lot of credit, which is probably undue. I mean, we have an awesome team. So it's really me, and I hire two interns each year, but we it's a funny joke, and the people who are not interns joke about it, but my interns are, we treat them as full-time employees. They have a ton of responsibility. Missy Perez, my intern, my social intern from last year, is working with the Phillies now. So she was running the account from day to day. So, I take issue with the whole, probably just some intern line, because we use interns and, you know, we get the best of the best, and they really make an impact on our efforts. So, you know, last year was, you know, my wife and I had a child, and as you know, Matt, and we moved, and Missy was really the brains behind the account. I get to sit here and take all the credit, but she kind of ran it. We have a great baseball info team and a great photographer and lots of resources at Major League Baseball Advanced Media. So definitely not a one person show.
So which one of you that does the snarky comebacks most of the time? Is it you or Missy or someone else?
Well, whoever is kind of running the account that day, as you know, that's become part of, at least part of our voice is not being afraid to defend ourselves when we think it's, when we think it's appropriate. So that's something that we've developed and something that we've tried to do over the last couple of years, and really kind of, our club has had a really, really good 4 years, of course, culminating last year with the World Series run, and hopefully we get back there this year. But, prior to this year, you know, I think part of the reason we developed that voice was, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of people, there weren't a whole lot of people in Cleveland that were, you know, jumping to defend us and defend our record and that sort of thing. So I think that was part of the reason behind it. You know, we wanted to, fight back a little bit against those perceptions and in town. So that's kind of how we, a little bit of how we arrived at where we are.
That's kind of, it's kind of like the whole Cleveland against the world kind of thing. Do you think the more the Indians win and get better, is it going to kind of turn like opposite at some point? Are you going to kind of manage like the kind of tone of it at all? Or, I mean, I really hope you don't because it's the greatest, but.
Well, it's a good question because, I mentioned that, there was some measure of, no one else is going to stick up for you, so you better stick up for yourself. Now, I mean, I think rightfully so. I think others, whether it be fans or media or whomever, are more willing to, defend us. And again, there's a lot of meat there. So, I've kicked around on whether we need to, because now what you see, as you guys have probably seen on there, now you see people just trolling us to try to get a reaction out of us. And,
yeah.
So trying to find a way to, maintain our voice and still, not give those people the satisfaction of, getting a response from the big bad Indians.
I know one from firsthand experience, you guys are really good at just like disarming people who are being overly snarky. Cause I remember one time, I don't maybe remember what you tweeted, but I said something back. It was the mildest amount of like snark at you, and all you were missing or somebody responded with is, "I'm sorry you feel that way." And I was like, oh no, I'm sorry. Like, I imagine if you're really trolling, that's going to at least do something. Like,
yeah,
take somebody back.
There's a great book called Love Your Haters that is really actually kind of played a little bit of a role into how we operate. And it's just, people are getting after you a little bit, just kill them with kindness. So that's probably what was going through our head at that point.
In terms of finding a voice for the account, you've talked about day-to-day different people are sometimes operating it. Is it just kind of, was it a process of trying different things out to see what felt right or what got the response that was most satisfying? Is there someone above you who gave any sort of directives or, what was the process of finding the voice?
Yeah, it's a good question. I've been asked that question a lot. It's not something that we, as a group, sat down to discuss or anything like that. I think, a couple years into my tenure, at the Indians, I kind of took over the social, overseeing on a day-to-day basis. And it was just something that, we wanted to do, more of, our goal is to engage with our fans. I mean, some of the negative stuff and some of the fighting back that we do kind of gets most of the attention, but if you scroll through our account, we want to interact with our fans. We want to know what our fans are talking about. We want to make our fans feel, part of the team, whether that's a simple like or response, happy birthday, that sort of thing. So, it's kind of an extension of our organization as a whole, right? We survey our fans extensively. We talk to them at the ballpark. Our fan service team talks to them, and I think social has become an extension of that. So we want to use that as an avenue to make our fans feel part of the team again, like I said, and really just reward them for being part of the conversation. So sometimes, of course, we extend that into kind of defending ourselves, but. And again, like I said, that stuff gets a lot of the attention. But if you scroll through our account, we're on there 20 hours a day, and looking to engage with our fans, know what they're talking about, and be in the conversation.
And is it just like, are you and your team? Do you have to go through anybody if you want to tweet something, or is it just kind of if one of you guys want to do it, you're allowed to just do it?
Well, to our organization's credit, they've given me and my group a lot of leeway and. A lot of latitude as far as, trying things out, developing that voice that we've developed, and seeing where it goes. So, I always tell people that it's my job, given that latitude, it's my job to know, where the line is. So if I'm getting close to the line, I run stuff up the ladder one rung and, if that needs to go up further than it does. But, I tell people that, look, we're not, this isn't a political campaign's Twitter account. We're not, you know, we're not tweeting about, you know, immigration or the healthcare reform, that sort of stuff. And, you know, so we try to have as much fun as possible. And if there is something that, you know, potentially could, you know, bring some things to us that maybe is not quite as positive as we want them, I do run them up the ladder. But again, like I said, it's on me to know where the line is. You know, there's a couple examples, and I'm sure you guys have seen these, but, you know, like the guy, there was a gentleman who actually is really good at what he does. He's at some agency now or something like that. But the guy from the Rockets, if you remember, tweeted that thing about they were playing the Mavericks in the playoffs, and he tweeted the horse and the gun emoji, and the text was "It'll all be over soon," and you know he lost his job over that. You know, and so you know, unfortunately, because they were good, and I think he's landed on his feet, so which is good, but you know. It's on me to know if something that we're going to do is across the line of good taste. And if so, I need to run up the ladder. And we've killed stuff that we thought might've been too far, but we've also run with stuff that we thought, was a little close to the line. So like I said, that's part of my job and kind of knowing where the line is.
Do you follow the other 29 teams' accounts closely, either to, you know, get ideas or see what they're up to or anything like that?
We follow the good teams on social. You know, not every team, not every organization has has the leeway that I'm lucky to have, and not everybody has those same goals and everything. So, you know, like there are teams that just are pretty, vanilla is probably the wrong word, but you know, just they're pretty straightforward with it. So, like those teams, I don't really follow, but. The teams that I know through my experience, my four and a half years or whatever now, that I know, are good and engaging and that sort of stuff. We pay attention to them and seeing what they're doing to see if, you know, there are things that we can adapt. You know, I mean, as you might expect, there's a lot of borrowing that goes on. You know, heck, we've borrowed stuff from other teams, and other teams have borrowed stuff from us. So we definitely keep our eyes out to the teams that we know that kind of have the same goals as us and the same approach as us to see what they're doing. And, the Rockies, I've become close with the Rockies guy because we had the final vote in 14 with Kluber and Justin Morneau. And so, they do a ton of great stuff, and I know the Cubs guy real well, and there's a ton of teams that do a lot of great stuff, but, there's a group of them that, I follow more closely than others. That was a long answer to your question.
No, that's a good one.
Long is good sometimes.
And, I won't bring anybody teams or names or anything like that, but I know like when there's some tweets from other teams that are either just really boring or really weird, people in our SB Nation Slack always ask, can we have the Indians Twitter account or the Cubs or just one of those? Can we just borrow? I'm like, no, you can't.
Yeah. One. Well, like I said, I think it's fair that, some teams have different goals for social than we do, which is fine. You know, yeah. I mean, you know, there are teams let's be honest, there are teams that don't need to, engage with their fans as closely maybe as we do on social because their fans are everywhere and in the ballpark all year, every year and that sort of thing. So, we look at social as another way to, create affinity for our club and drive, advocacy for the club. And, there are teams that, that's not a goal or they don't have to do that. So,
yeah. So I want to mention, go ahead, Jason.
Last year's intern working for the Phillies now, do you think Indians Twitter will become like Indians front office and will just become a farm system for Twitter accounts around Major League Baseball?
You know, it's a good question, Jason. It's funny because, I sort of expressed my disdain a little earlier for the whole not an intern thing and just an intern thing. Well, you guys know very well that our front office, if you work in the Indians baseball operations department, then you're thought of very highly, right? Our guys and girls go and get jobs elsewhere. Derek Falvey went from assistant GM to president of baseball ops with the Twins, we've got people that are, so hopefully that's an extent that extends to us because, like I said, we ask our interns to do a ton. My two interns do have a ton on their plate. They just started actually, last Monday. They have a ton on their plate. Courtney Schilling was an intern with us. She runs she's part of the Cavs team now. We've had people go to big time ad agencies in town. We had a guy go to Major League Baseball. We have a guy that, works for US Speed Skating now. So hopefully that, you know, the whole, you know, the farm system from our baseball ops department is you know, extended to us because we've placed people that are our interns in great jobs. And, you know, I think that when people see that they're an intern for the Indians, you know, they're thought of very highly. So, you know, I talked to the Phillies guy and I told him, like, look, Missy is, you know, she ran our accounts and that was, you know, he, you know, he's like, well, that's because, you know, people look at our stuff and, you know, for better or worse, and I'm not trying to brag or anything, but, you know, people like our stuff. And I think that is a testament that we do a pretty good job. And I think the fact that she got hired and, you know, we've placed interns elsewhere in good jobs is a testament to that. So, you know, that's part of, you know, when we post internships, we get 250 applications and,
sure.
You know, that's just for communications. I can't imagine what the baseball operations people get, you know? So people want to work for the Indians and that's, I think that's a good reflection on our organization.
Have those applications increased? Like as you guys got more popular with your tweets and everything, or has it always been like a ton every year?
Maybe a little, but it's been pretty steady as far as the volume.
So I want to talk about a couple of my personal favorites. I don't know if anybody else like keeps track of them or anything, but the first one was this year. It was Josh Tomlin before he lost the game. I don't know if you thought of this or you saw it somewhere, but it was just like you did folders going down as if you're opening them on a computer where it was like 2016 or Indians pitchers, 2016's Josh Tomlin lost his folder is empty.
Yeah.
That one was great. Did you just think of that on your own or did somebody else think of it or
where did you come up with that one? I don't know where we saw that, but that was borrowed. You know, I told you that we got a lot of credit for that one, but that was borrowed. So I don't remember who we borrowed it for. I wish I did because I would give them credit for it. But as you know, like I said, as you might expect, there's a lot of that that goes on. And we thought that was, and we, you know, as you saw, we used that a couple different times throughout the year and people loved it. So, you know, why not keep using it?
So the other one, you've done it before with Kobe, but this one I particularly liked it because you tweeted out a picture of when Tim Tebow announced that he was going to start playing baseball. It was just a picture of an Indians uniform, and then the next tweet immediately was, oops, that wasn't supposed to get out.
Yeah.
I thought that was great. Did you expect that to get as big as it did? And
Yeah, I did. And you know, that was – again, I sit here and I do these interviews and I get to take all the credit. But that was – you know, we're sitting around in our desk one day and all of a sudden – Adam Schefter, who has, you know, God, he has 6 million followers on Twitter or something, says, oh, Tim Tebow. Of course, our followers are like, oh, Indians, you got to go get him. You got to go get him. It's like, this is so stupid. And so we're sitting around and we're like, oh, this is funny. You know, like I talked about, I want to know what our fans are talking about. I want to be part of the conversation. And if it fits, let's participate. So, you know, we're sitting around and, you know, we, you know, kicked around some ideas and so we arrived at, well, why don't we put an Indians uniform on him and then followed up with, oh no, you know, cause we were, you know, presumably getting ready to sign him, blah, blah, blah. Excuse me. That was actually one that I did run up the ladder a little bit just because, you know, who knows, is that like tampering? You know, I don't know. So we ran that up the ladder, a little bit, but, you know, everybody was cool with it. And, I just did a little countdown of our most engaged tweets of the year. I think that was like our second or third most engaged tweet. You know, we went to the World Series this year.
Yeah, but
and that Tim was Tebow like the third most engaged tweet of the year. So, yeah, you know, I have these conversations with people and I like start blushing because I was pretty proud of that one. So.
It was even in that tweet itself. Somebody mentioned that the Photoshop was horrible. They were joking, but they said this is horrible Photoshop. There's yellow all over the thing from his. Oh, no, that was the Kobe one.
That was Kobe.
Yeah.
Because we photoshopped him over his Lakers jersey.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about Photoshop, so I thought it was great. I thought it worked better because, you know, you could tell we slapped it together real fast. And, you know, we played off it just saying he had mustard stains and that sort of stuff.
It's baseball. It's hot dogs. It's
mustard. Sure.
So the last one's kind of the opposite. With Rajai Davis, when he hit that home run, how are you not just like slapping the keyboard and hitting tweet? That's basically what I did. Did you have to kind of keep yourself level when you're tweeting those kind of things, or were you? I know you probably can't cheer where you are, but were you internally cheering and just typing very calmly that Rajai Davis tied the game?
That was wild. I mean, I don't know if you guys were, you know, at the ballpark that day, but I mean, it was just an incredible moment. And you know, I think, well, I vividly remember this because we discussed it afterward, but I very strongly grabbed my other intern's arm to keep myself from cheering and or screaming and all that. But the next few minutes were sort of a blur. I couldn't even tell you what we did after that. I think we used like a stock GIF that we had from previous, from earlier in the season of Rajay, and followed it up with, you know, our photographer. Like I mentioned, we've got a great team. Our photographer sends us live photos from the photo pit. So immediately after that, you know, they come in like a minute. So immediately after the original tweet, we, I think we sent some photos of the dugout reaction and Rajay going around the bases. And if you remember that, the ballpark was just, yeah, you know, it was shaking. So, somehow I kept it together long enough to get those few things out. But that was, as you know, that was a very wild, wild sequence.
Yeah, even seeing him like choke up on the bat as much as he did, the whole, everything about that was just great.
Yeah.
So did nobody cheered like they weren't supposed to in the box, or did a few people?
Honestly,
they're not supposed to.
Honestly, like I said, it was such a blur. I couldn't even tell you.
Where are you during the game? Are you in the press box or are you in like an office?
No, I was in the press box, and and then after that, so MLB is pretty tight, especially during the World Series with like field access. So, you know, we were down and it wasn't looking good for us, and I'm resigning myself to, you know, okay, this stinks. And well, all of a sudden when the game's tied, you get a text from MLB's social people and say, hey, if you want on the field, if you guys win and you want on the field, you have to get down to the tunnel right now. So I get those couple tweets out. And I quickly gathered, you know, I had like a, I don't know if you know what an Osmo is, but it's like a thing that you hold your phone with to keep your hand steady. Mm-hmm. So I had to gather that. I had to get my portable charger. I had to get, so I'm sprinting down to the tunnel. And, so that, like I said, it was all a blur. And then of course the rain delay hits and, you know, it was just crazy. However long it was, I couldn't even 20 minutes, 30 minutes. I don't even know.
Yeah, right before that, I mean, I wasn't at the ballpark. I was at home, but my wife was watching with me before that. She went up. She said, okay, I'm done. And then, like, she came down right before that home run, and then she decided to stay down for the rest of the game. Unfortunately, she stayed down for the rest of the game, but she got to watch that at least.
Yeah.
I'm thinking a lot of people might have just given up, and then the home run brought them back to excitement for a little bit. So,
yep.
Even with the loss, that was a good way to end it, I think.
Yeah, it was crazy. You know, it was just so fun. I'm glad that, you know, the organization from Paul to, you know, the ballpark cleaning crew, you know, got to experience that because, you know, you probably saw, we clinched in Detroit and I'm on the field, you know, we had a plan and, you know, you talk about postseason planning, you don't want to jinx it, but you're planning for postseason. And so we had a plan and, you know, my crew back home was helping me, but, you know, we were on the field, you know, if you remember, we had a periscope of the live video of the on-field celebration in Detroit. We switched to Facebook Live for the clubhouse in Detroit. You know, we went to Boston and, you know, did the same thing and, you know, took a picture of the scoreboard on the monster, you know, and really got after that Boston writer who was after us. And, you know, it was awesome to see, just, you know, to kind of validate all the planning you do, because there's a lot of planning that goes into it. And, you know, I'm just talking about us, but, you know, from everybody in the organization, it was just cool to, you know, 13 was, if you guys remember, 13 was fun, but it ended so abruptly. You know, we prepped the ballpark and we turned the kids clubhouse into an auxiliary press box. And, you know, we hosted one game. So it was weird, you know, it was kind of bittersweet. And then to be able to go through all that and, you know, kind of have all your planning work out and get to see that and get to see all the fans. And it was just cool. It was just cool to go through all that. And I'm glad, you know, our fans and the organization got to experience all that.
Yeah. So for our final question, it's a very important one to his Let's Go Tribe. Do you have any idea why Jose Ramirez first blocked us and then unblocked us and randomly sent us a thumbs up?
So I probably do know, and I don't know if I should say this, but Jose is very, you know, he plays with a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah.
You could probably tell that. And
a little bit, yeah.
I asked our translator to ask him. I said, hey, because there was some other folks who had the same thing happen and, you know, they were blocked. And I said, hey, you know, these people are generally very supportive and I don't think they've ever, you know, tweeted anything bad or anything to Jose. I think what happened was is that anybody who, you know, this year came out and said, oh, J-Ram's my favorite player, I love J-Ram. Mm-hmm. This is going to sound funny, but this is how this guy's wired. I mean, and it's probably why he's so good that, you know, he signed, I don't know, what did he sign for the Dominican Republic? Like $10,000, you know? And so,
oh, yeah, it's really low.
And, you know, he came up and I think, was it 13, late in 13, he played okay, and then 14, he struggled, or maybe it was the whatever. You know his story arc. I mean, he came up, he played okay late that one year. The next year, he struggled, went back to the minors after Lindor came up, and blah, 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 blah. And of course, last year had a breakout year. So his attitude, I think, is that if you weren't with me during my struggles, then, you know, I don't want to hear this now from you. So it's a little backwards, but
no, I get it. That's great.
I'll give him credit for using, you know, whatever perceived slight, even if the slight is not real, to motivate him. So I would not take it personally.
But what you're saying is we could take credit for his great year because obviously, I mean, we were the main motivator.
Yes.
So we should just do it again, right?
I think that, yeah, I think you could take credit. Yeah, absolutely. I don't see why not.
Of course, there's no reason. No, that, like, thumbs up. That, like, made my, like, week for a while. That was awesome when he did that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Jose is, you know, I don't, you know, it's funny. He doesn't speak a whole lot of English, but, you know, you still can communicate with the guy. He's, mm-hmm. he's hilarious, and you can just tell that that he's funny as heck, and as you know, he's a huge part of our team, and I can't wait to see you know, what he does this year. I'm really looking forward to seeing if he can, you know, I don't know if he can duplicate what he did because he had such a great year, but I'm looking forward to seeing what he does.
Absolutely. Me too. It was a lot of fun. The whole helmet thing, everything about Jose was a lot of fun.
Yep. Yep.
So this is the time where I usually say, go ahead and tell us where they can find you. But if you want to humor us and tell us, where can people find you, Joel, on Twitter?
Well, we are at Indians on Twitter, and we are, yes, we are on Snapchat. We are on Instagram. We are on Facebook. So, you know, what we try to do as much, you know, one of our goals, you know, we've got, you know, I mentioned one of our goals is to stay engaged with our fans. It's to, you know, create advocates for our team. You know, another huge goal of ours is to, connect our fans with our players. And hopefully you guys and your listeners and your readers have seen us really try to, you know, connect our players with our fans. And so if you follow us on all those platforms, we'll have, you know, exclusive content with our players all year long. TribeFest is coming up. So we've got a bunch of stuff planned for TribeFest. And, you know, we do Facebook Live interviews with our guys. We do Snapchat takeovers. We do, Reddit AMAs if you're on Reddit. Definitely add us on all those and you'll hear from our players through those, media all season long.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Joel. We're going to take a quick break after this. We're going to talk some exciting arbitration stuff. We're going to let Joel go for now. Stick around, everybody. Okay, and we are back. Thanks again, Joel Hammon, for joining us. Of course, you can find him at Indians. You already know that. You better know that. Yeah, that was great, Jason.
Yeah, so? Lots of good stuff, as I would have expected from someone who's in charge of one of the best accounts on Twitter.
Yeah, and I like how he was humble about it and everything. I like that he did completely shy away from the fact that some of them were really good and some of them were him. I think that's cool. He's just a great guy all around, I think, and it's fun that they interact with the fans so much. As I mentioned briefly, not all accounts do that. Some of them are pretty stale. He said vanilla, which is kind of the same thing, but I think stale's a step further and is basically what they are. So I think we're lucky. So anyway, let's get on to real exciting stuff, Jason. The very exciting baseball act of arbitration. The deadline to actually sign a player or avoid arbitration. Well, the deadline to submit figures was last Friday. The Indians avoided it completely with 7 of 8 players. They did exchange figures with Brandon Guyer, so they can still avoid court with him if they get something worked out before, I want to say January 30th, I think is the deadline.
I think all the way up to the hearing, and the hearings are in February, but they haven't released the specific calendar for them yet.
Yeah, right. But yeah, the Indians, they avoided with everybody. I won't go over all the numbers, but just quickly, if anybody follows MLB trade rumors. So the Indians were under on almost everybody they signed based on MLBTR's estimates, which, by the way, were very close. Glancing over it, none of them were more than $500,000 away, I don't think, compared to what the Indians signed. The only ones the Indians went over on were Brian Shaw. They went over by... what would a tenth of a million be? 100,000. Went over Chisenhall by 200,000 and barely over McAllister by like a little over 100,000. So, I mean, as far as getting the deals that it looked like they were going to get, I think they did pretty good. I'm glad they avoided arbitration with so many players. They haven't done it very much in the past. A few years ago, they had to do it with Josh Tomlin and a couple others. And then before that, it was like 20 years before they went to court. So I hope they avoid going to court with Brandon Guyer. But it is important to note they're not going to lose Guyer either. They'll just pay him what he wants or they'll pay him less. The court can be kind of ugly, but there's no risk of like losing the player over it or anything.
Yeah. I mean, there's always some concern that a hearing will, I mean, because when you go into a hearing, you're trying to make the case that he's worth less money than he thinks. And so you sort of have to go in and make the case that he's not as good as he thinks he is. So there's a theory that that turns players off and it's bad for your relationship with the player. I'm sure in some cases that's true. Ultimately, you know, Brandon Guyer has worked out really, really well. I sort of think they'll still settle ahead of time, but if they don't, it's not like offending Francisco Lindor or something like that. So I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. But, you know, you mentioned the MLB trade rumors, predictions for things being, you know, all very, very close. And that's the thing. At this point, they do a good job with that. And there's a large enough sort of track record and pool of previous similar players. We can get a pretty good idea of what everyone's, assuming it's a one-year deal, what they're going to do ahead of time. So we've been able to kind of predict what the Indians' overall payroll would be. And, you know, and that's how it's locked in right now. You know, Cody Allen was the most expensive of those players at $7.35 million. But no big surprises.
Are you a little surprised that they went over on McAllister, that they didn't get him a little cheaper?
No.
I mean, I don't hate him like everybody else does, but
under over is still just comparison. You know, it's right. Just MLB trade rumors, you know, best guess. It's not like there's some like official figure that they, it's not like going over slot on a draft pick or something like that. So no, I'm not surprised. None of the figures seemed especially surprising to me at all.
I don't know. Have you seen Brandon Guyer's figures at all? I saw a lot of them were posted by John Heyman on Twitter. I didn't see
I want to say it was like 1.9 and 2.3. So the Indians offered 1.9 and he asked for 2.3. So they might settle somewhere around 2.1. That's kind of the silly thing about going to a hearing. It's like, are you really going to go to a hearing over $200,000, which for a Major League Baseball team is almost literally a rounding error?
Yeah, and like you said, it can get ugly because you're arguing against them earning what they want to earn. And then I'm sure he understands. It's not going to like hurt his feelings, but it can probably get kind of weird in there.
Yeah, I tend to think they'll work something out ahead of time. I'd be interested to know, you know, what the holdup so far has been. I would guess they settle somewhere in the middle before a hearing.
Yeah, for sure. So anything else on the exciting world of arbitration before we move on to social media questions?
Matt, you're really in danger of overselling the second of our show on arbitration here. You can pretend that's before you did that.
No, I do like arbitration. It's just like I liked arbitration, actually. I like the whole baseball offseason. Like, so much of it is more interesting than basketball and football. It's just the idea of talking about salary arbitration court in sports is just kind of funny and silly to me. But no, in general, I like the little like details of the financials of baseball. It's one of the things I like about it.
The only thing I was keeping an eye on was Bauer and Salazar as compared to one another, because they're both in like the exact same place, basically.
And Bauer got like
$150,000. I feel like most Indians fans, if they had to pick one or the other to keep, would keep Salazar. So it's interesting to me that Bauer got a little more money.
Do you think that's the arm at all? Like the constant injuries at the end there? Or do they not really count?
Maybe. I mean, you know, yeah, Bauer certainly his health track record is a lot stronger, you know, which means his numbers this past season, you know, are coming off of a fully healthy season. And that probably is the explanation. It's just like I said, I think most Indians fans, if they pick one or the other, would pick Salazar.
Yeah, I think I probably would, too. I mean, unless, like, how long the leash is it going to have before people would rather pick Bauer in the regular season? Like, if we get the second half Salazar for a good month and a half, I'm going to be pretty worried at that point, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I've said before, I feel like Salazar's future is in the bullpen just because of his injury stuff. But, you know, I think it makes sense to obviously try him as a starter again. His injury and struggles weren't prolonged enough to think, you give up on him. But if I were betting 2-3 years from now, I don't think Salazar is a starting pitcher at that point.
Ooh, I was gonna say bold. I don't know if that's bold, but that's a prediction. You're kind of like reaching out on the limb and like sort of going out on it. I like that though. It's like not crazy. If we were doing crazy preseason predictions, that wouldn't be crazy, but that would be one. I think that's interesting. But yeah, the Indians definitely have plenty to replace them in the rotation eventually. Because we've said so many times before, they don't have very many ones and twos, but they have plenty of like 3 through 5s coming up through the system, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, when we talked about prospects, was that last week or 2 weeks ago? I don't know. I think there's a couple exciting arms on the farm. I just don't think any of them are arriving for a couple of years. So hopefully Salazar can keep it together well enough to be a starter for 2017 and 2018. And by 2019, maybe someone exciting is ready to move up.
Like someone who rhymes with Tristan Mishwenzi?
Something like that.
He's the one I'm most looking forward to. I mean, if
beautiful
he makes
poetry.
It was. That's, you don't know who I'm talking about. I don't want to say it directly, but if you dig around a little bit, follow the clues, you'll figure it out.
It's Cody Anderson. I know. Yeah,
it is. It is. I love Cody Anderson. I thought his rookie year was the best, and he was the best pitcher ever. No, I don't mind. Okay, so let's move on to those social media questions. I always forget the day because we changed it, but every Monday, I always ask on Facebook and Twitter, whoever wants to send us a question, we'll answer it on the show. We usually get to quite a few of them. Today, we had Joel's interview, but we still have quite a bit of time for his questions, so we'll answer a few. This first one, it actually kind of absorbs a topic we were going to talk about before. This guy's Twitter handle is I Hate Chisenhall. He has a total of 3 tweets, so I don't know what he's doing out there, but that's that guy. He wanted to know, is Michael Sanders for the last outfield spot? He can play all 3 spots and can be insurance for Brantley and help replace Rajai. Obviously, that was asked before Michael Sanders signed a 1-year deal with the Phillies for $9 million. But I wanted to look at it just before that to see, kind of comparing Sanders and Bautista. They were really similar last season. Sanders slashed .253, .338, .478 with 24 home runs. Bautista was right around that mark. He just walked a little more, and he had 22 home runs. Bautista came out with a slightly better WRC+, but they were really similar. The only difference is, I think, that Bautista's came as part of a decline, and Sanders came as like a really good season almost out of nowhere. So I don't know. I think they kind of were interchangeable. They signed a deal. Sanders is obviously cheaper a little bit. But I think the Indians were just chasing Bautista to get that super deal if they could get him really cheap. But obviously they can't because the Jays are going to sign him for about what he wanted, I think. Not what he wanted at the beginning, but what he wanted, which is more than the qualifying offer.
Yeah, I mean, what I've seen, it's not going to be significantly more than that. I think it'll be a little bit more. And what I've seen is probably some sort of mutual option.
Yep.
For 2018, too. But, I mean, Bautista not long ago was talking about how he was going to get a $100 million deal. So settling for, like, a 1-year $19 or $20 million year with an option it has to be a pretty big disappointment for him, especially because at his age, it's not likely he's, you know, I mean, in theory, like, oh, you take a 1-year contract, you hit free agency again. But I think his chance of getting even a $50 million contract, that ship has sailed on him now.
Yeah, I would say. Are you on the side of Indians fans who didn't want him just because of, I'm not going to say locker room presence, that kind of dumb, but just his whole attitude about everything? Or did you want him at all? Or did you not want him because he seemed like he was on a decline? Like, where were you with Jose Bautista when they were rumored to be going after him for a little while?
The personality, locker room, whatever you want to call it stuff, is like a non-thing to me. I guess I could have asked Edwin Encarnacion, like, hey, you know, what can you tell us about him? But no, I mean, like, just from based on what's in the media or on Twitter or from other fan bases, that stuff didn't bother me at all. But he didn't really interest me, not for, you know, what I thought he was going to take. If he had said, hey, I want to come play for you for, you know, 1 year, $19 million or whatever the Blue Jays are signing for him, the Indians don't have that kind of money anyway. And even if they maybe did, I don't think he would have been the best use of it. I think he's at an age where health is more likely than not going to continue to be an issue for him the way it was in 2016. His bat fell off a lot, and he doesn't really provide much value outside of his bat. He was maybe... he wasn't even an average player this year. He was an above average hitter, but below average everything else. So no, he doesn't, he would have felt like a small upgrade to me in the outfield. I mean, a legitimate, but not a big one, and not one that would be worth, an 8-figure contract.
For sure. Colin Blyler in the comments, he said it'd be huge if we had got Justin Turner. Sure, I kind of wanted him. I'm way happier with Edwin Encarnacion, I think. Getting a first baseman with that kind of bat is better than Justin Turner, I would say. But I would have taken Turner over Bautista, but not over Encarnacion.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Turner over Bautista, absolutely. In terms of compared to Encarnacion, I feel like in terms of, like, overall as a player in a vacuum, you can make a decent case for either one of them at this point. But I think in terms of fitting the Indians' needs, Encarnacion's a better fit.
Yep. And his bat's probably good enough to make up for if Brantley isn't quite there. Compared to Turner's, I think. So the next one from Rob or Paul Robert Belzer on Facebook. He wants to know any news on the current condition of Steve Delabar. Is he healthy and or a real option for our bullpen? So the first part of that question, we couldn't really figure out. We couldn't find an injury. We don't know if Paul is talking about his injury 6 years ago when he injured his elbow and he thought his career was over and he became a substitute teacher and came back and all that stuff. So we don't know if it's that, but I don't know of any current injury. But Jason, do you think he's an option for this year in the bullpen at all, or just kind of one of those signings we'll forget about
in
a year?
I think he's the guy you sign. I mean, he's quite a ways removed from having been, kind of a worthwhile piece. Last year, he hardly pitched in Major League Baseball at all, and he signed with a team in Japan and went over and pitched like a couple games over there. The last time he was anything but bad in the major leagues was 2013, which is a long time ago at this point. And even then, I mean, the substitute teacher to major leagues is like a neat story. Even at his peak, he was like, you know, like your sixth guy in the bullpen or something like that. He managed to make an all-star team for Toronto in 2013, which he must have had one heck of a first half. I see him as like, I don't know, maybe like 12th in line for the bullpen or something like that. So to me, if he's pitching for the Indians at some point this season, multiple things have gone bad.
Was there any last year that were his equivalent? I mean, they signed a bunch, but like Tommy Hunter, I guess, but he actually stayed on the team. I was trying to think when I first asked the question if I can think of like a comparison to last season, but I already forgot those guys. He's going to be one of those guys who next year won't even remember the Indians signed him, I don't think.
Yeah, no, exactly. He's going to be one of those guys 6 months from now, I don't think remember the Indians signed him because he's not going to be pitching for the Indians.
So Vinny Watkins on Facebook, he asks, do we resign re-sign Napoli? No. Why? Why are you doing this? Why? is that was a joke. It was a really good one, Vinny. But no, the Indians are not going to re-sign Mike Napoli. There's no reason. He's not, I don't know if he was the heart and soul of the team to everybody, but even if he was, they're not going to sign him to be a bench heart and soul of the team. They have their first baseman. They have their DH. They have a ton of clubhouse leaders. They are not re-signing Mike Napoli. Do you want to take the devil's advocate for this one, Jason, and try to?
No, I think you know the answer is no. We continue to be happy for the time we had together, and wish him well wherever he goes in life from here. But it's not going to be with the Indians.
Yeah, I do always try to bring that up. I mean, I did not want the Indians to sign him this year, but I am very happy for him if he gets paid like a ton of money somewhere else. Let Texas just pour money on him. I'm okay with that. I'm still a fan of him as a person, just I didn't want the Indians to pay him in his year 37 or age 37 year, I think. But there's going to be a decline there. I don't want the Indians paying for it. So I hope somebody does.
Even if there's not, there's nowhere to put
him. There's no room for him now. But even before they signed Encarnacion, I wanted like a lot of other first basemen first.
Yeah.
So Mitch White, we'll finish with this one here on Facebook. He wants to know, why not sign Rajai rather than pay Lonnie $4.3 million this year? I think Rajai brings more to the table considering all of his stolen bases last year. Jason, what do you think? So why did they go to arbitration with Chisholm instead of just give money to Rajai?
Davis signed with Oakland for $6 million, a one-year deal. So, $1.7 million, which isn't, in terms of the difference between their 2017 contracts, isn't nothing, but isn't a significant amount either. I have to think if the Indians had preferred Davis, they could have found the extra money. Lonnie's a lot younger. And, I think Rajai did well last year in terms of the stolen bases. I also think the stolen bases are one of those things, like it's easy to lock onto that and overlook a lot of other things, like his 306 on base percentage, his defense, which advanced metrics were sort of mixed on, but the consensus would be, not what it used to be. Lonnie's a better hitter. I think Lonnie's a better offensive player, even factoring in the base running. Lonnie's defensive metrics also mix. So, I mean, a lot of it is, I mean, I guess you can convince yourself Davis was a lot better than him last year, depending on which metrics you favor. But offensively, Lonnie's better. He's 8 years younger, so he's more likely to maintain or maybe even get a little better. He's a little cheaper. And because he's in arbitration, signing him is like signing a player to a one-year deal with a team option for the year after that. So I think the arguments for Davis aren't bad. But I think if I had to pick one or the other at their contract, I would have gone with Chisenhall. So I can't really fault the Indians for doing the same thing. I think, you know, we'll see Brandon Guyer, you know, platooning with him, and, you know, potentially platooning with some other guys too. You know, Guyer is going to play every time they're facing a lefty. Yeah, Davis sort of like Napoli, like, you know, happy memories, but not really worth, I don't think, spending a lot of time and energy wishing they'd stay together.
Yeah, I think the team control is the biggest one. I was trying to look it up while you're talking. That I think he has one more year of arbitration. Lonnie does.
Yeah, Chisenhall is. Yeah, he's exactly. They'll go to arbitration again next offseason if nothing changes between now and then, and then he'd be a free agent after 2018.
So if Chisenhall and Davis were both free agents, I know Chisenhall would obviously get more than 4.3, but if you had the option of signing Chisenhall for 1 year for 4.3 or Davis for what he got, would you still choose Chisenhall without that second year, or would you go Davis at that point?
I mean, if I were offered them for the same exact contract, let's say they're both available for $6 million, I think I would have signed Chisenhall. It'd be close, but give me the extra $1.7 million. Give me the extra year of team control. And, you know, it's not like I don't think it was a bad question. I wouldn't say someone who would prefer Davis is, you know, way off base or anything like that. But I'd side with Lonnie.
Yeah, me too. I like you said, I really like you also have really good memories with Davis. I do too. I mean, like comparing him to Napoli, his memories are so much. But maybe it's just clouded because of that home run in Game 7. But it feels like I have so many more good memories of Rizai Davis. It already feels weird that we're going to see him in another jersey, even though he's been here for a year. But yeah, I would side with Lonnie too. I still like his defense in left field. That cannon arm still comes through once in a while. And you did point out that Davis's defense is kind of overlooked how bad it was at times. He had that whole Sun game, which is just a one-game thing, but that still happened. That was really bad. And he was just kind of average the rest of the year. So I do think the Indians will miss the stolen bases, not to the point where it would be worth signing him over Chisenhall, though. And can we talk about how Carlos Santana is obviously a much better player, but Chisenhall has like become the new hate this guy, even though he's perfectly fine kind of player. There are so many people that just hate Chisenhall for, did I miss something here? Is it because he's a failed third baseman and they're still stuck on that? Or, I mean, one guy who asked us a question, his name is @IHateChisenhall. I mean, there's a lot of blind hate for the guy and I don't really see why.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't share in their feelings. I think there's two things worth mentioning. One, he was a high draft pick and a really highly rated prospect. And so to some extent, I think there's an air of disappointment connected to him because, you know, he was a first round pick and, you know, going into, gosh, probably like 2010, 2011, he was like one of the top 40 or 50 prospects in baseball. And like the truth is the career he's had so far is probably, you know, an above the median for a top 40 prospect. But I think people expect more at that point. And then the other thing is you compared him to Carlos Santana as like someone who gets hated and is perfectly capable, which that sells Santana short because Santana has been a much better player than Chisenhall.
So I said that too. I pointed that out. I'm just saying on a smaller scale.
I just think like, to me, hating Chisenhall is more like, He's not a significant, I mean, he's an important part of the team, but he's just not like significant enough to get that worked up about is why it's bizarre to me. To the extent that people do, I think it's an average hitter and who knows what to make of his defense and two different positions and stuff. I think it just feels like less than people were hoping for 5 years ago.
Yeah, and that's probably it. It's just the expectations versus reality. It's going to happen with more prospects. It's probably going to happen with Bradley Zimmer, I think. Because I think people are starting. There's no reason to just suddenly be so down on him just because of the strikeouts. But when he comes up, he's not going to be like a superstar, and people are going to think he was. And then there's going to be so many people like saying, "I knew he was going to be bad because he struck out a lot," and it's going to be unbearable for a little while. Hopefully, he just bucks all that and he's awesome. I don't know, but yeah, that's our questions. That's pretty much our show. So what are you doing this week, Jason? One step closer to babydom, right?
Yeah. One step closer to babydom, or 1 week closer to babydom, I guess. I don't know how many steps I'm taking in a week towards that.
For now, your steps are really big, and then when the baby comes, it's all like small, tired, drooping steps. Although I will say with that, everybody always said how long, like, everybody has made a huge deal about not getting sleep. But I mean, even if the kid doesn't sleep for like 6 months, it's still like 6 months, then you get to sleep. I always thought that was over-exaggerated. I don't know if you'll find the same thing, but maybe mine are just good sleepers. But it didn't seem like the period of not being able to sleep lasted enough for all the hype it got.
Yeah, my perspective on pretty much everything relating to what it being a new parent is like is everyone's stories are completely related to what their own babies were like, and right. You don't know what your own baby's going to be like. So
yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. So anything exciting other than that this next week?
Nope, just a week.
Yeah. 1 week closer to pitchers and catchers, and 1 week closer to January being over. It's crazy how close February is now. I'm really ready for baseball. We just got our prospect count on the site, and that's pretty much it. There's occasional things that happen, but this is the really boring period. It's where we can do weird stuff, which is fun, because Matt and Tyler are doing like the Twitch streams and the Facebook Live stuff, so it opens up a lot of time for interesting things, which we won't be able to really do during the regular season, which is neat. But other than that, I am ready for February. That's it for the show. So thanks again for Joel for joining us. That was a great interview. That was a lot of fun. I love getting people like that who are, they're like part of the Indians, but not the ones that are high enough where they have to, I don't know how I want to describe it. Like they can do more than just like canned interview responses. It was a really good interview. He's really, really knows what he's talking about. It's really great. A lot of perspectives. So thanks everyone for listening. We will see you next week.